to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Psy. And with me is Arvind. And we are here to continue Satsang that we began last week. The Satsang is on a very important topic, a topic which was requested by some of our listeners, and definitely a topic which is needed for both of us too. It's a topic called anger management. And before we summarize what we spoke about last week, and there are some very important points that we have to make this week too, which we are hoping that all of us can learn from what Swami has told on this topic. So let's, as always, begin by offering our most loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet. Saram Arvind. And even as I'm saying that, today's topic is on anger management. I think last week, both of us would have had that opportunity of telling somebody that we're doing a satsang on anger management, and them giving a very surprised look that, are you talking about anger management? Because I think that is something which all of us struggle with at some level or the other, right?
Absolutely. And that is why, you know, I feel that this whole program, this whole process of Afternoon Satsang, of we working at Radio Psy, it is not as if we are doing here something for others' benefit. I am reminded of the day when in this very studio, you know, Swami was seated on this sofa that's a meter away from us. And as he sat here, he said, I have got nothing to gain from this whole thing. But if this project, if this process is going to help you evolve spiritually, then all my blessings are there for you to go ahead. So just like any of the other Swami's projects, this project Radio Psy 2 also Swami started because it aids the spiritual growth of the people involved. And when we say people involved, it's not just the listeners. Definitely it includes us. And I was reminded of that when we speak about anger management, because anger management is something that, like everybody else, we too need in large dosage. So last week we saw the terrible ill effects that anger can bring about, and we heard in Swami's own words, he said that the two greatest diseases, the worst kind of diseases that humankind ever suffers from, are the diseases of anger and jealousy. Finally, we concluded last week with tips and techniques that Bhagwan has given us on how to control the expression of anger. And we also came to a conclusion that it is not just enough to control the expression of anger. We have to go deeper and control the anger from arising in us itself. So that is where we will be starting off today from. That is how to go deeper to control the arising of anger. But before that, you know, the different techniques that we had spoken about from Bhagwan's discourses, we found one discourse clip where Swami is summarizing all those techniques together.
Okay.
So it will be very interesting to listen to that and then proceed with our discussion. This is a clip taken from the discourse that Bhagwan delivered on the 24th of May 1992 during the summer course that year. And it was addressed to the students, but I'm sure it's relevant to all of us listeners.
Embodiments of divine love, boys and girls.
ఆధ్యాత్మికమంటే మొట్టమొదటి అర్థాన్ని తెలుసుకోవాలి.
Understand the meaning first and foremost, what is spirituality?
మన మానవత్వమును దైవత్వంగా మార్చుకోవాలి.
We have to transform our humanity into divinity.
మన మనసును దైవం వైపును మరచాలి.
We have to divert our mind towards God.
మన మనసును దైవం వైపును మరచినప్పుడే
when you divert our mind towards
God, కూడా ఈశ్వరుడిగా మారిపోయింది.
Then the bull also becomes the god.
కోతి కూడాను హనుమంతుడిగా మారిపోయాడు.
The monkey becomes the god.
పక్షి కూడాను గరుడిగా మారిపోయింది.
The bird also becomes the god.
ఇవన్నీ భగవంతుని యొక్క అంగములుగా రూపొందుతూ వచ్చాయి.
All of them became the limbs and organs of God.
కనుక మనలో ఉండేటువంటి పశుత్వాన్ని దూరం చేసుకుంటే,
when we conquer the animality in us,
పశుపతులుగా మారవచ్చు.
We can become ourselves the lord of the animals.
కనుక కోపం వచ్చినా, ద్వేషం వచ్చినా, అసూయ వచ్చినా, అహంకారం వచ్చినా, మనం ఏమాత్రం కూడాను దానికి లొంగిపోకూడదు.
When the anger or greed or jealousy or ego arises in us, don't be conquered by them.
నీవు క్వైట్ గా కూర్చో.
For a few minutes, sit down quietly.
కోపం వచ్చినప్పుడు నీవు ఇష్టం వచ్చినట్టు వారి ఇంకొకరిని తిట్టడం కానీ కొట్టడం కానీ ఇంకే విధమైనటువంటి మాట్లాడటం కానీ చేయకూడదు.
When you get angry, do not scold others, admonish others.
దీన్ని ప్రాక్టీస్ ఏ రీతిగా చేయాలంటే తక్షణమే ఆ స్థానం నువ్వు వదలు.
What is to be practiced? We have to leave that place immediately.
బయట విచ్చలవిడిగా ఉండేటువంటి స్వేచ్ఛగా సంచరించేటువంటి గాలిలో ఒక్క ఫర్లాంగ్ ఒక మైల్ దూరం చక్కగా నడుచుకుంటురా.
Go outside and walk for 1 mile in the open space.
స్పీడ్గా నడుస్తూ పోతలకి ఈ బాడీలో ఉన్నటువంటి బ్లడ్ సర్క్యులేషన్ స్పీడ్ అయిపోయి ఆ కోపం భావం కూడా మారిపోతుంది.
When you walk fast, the blood circulation will become fast and the anger will subside.
ఇంకా విద్యార్థులారా, ఇంకా సులభమైన మార్గం ఏమిటంటే,
what is the easier than this?
నీకు కోపం వచ్చినప్పుడు ఒక నిలువుటద్దంలో పోయి నీ ముఖాన్ని నువ్వు చూసుకో.
When you get angry, stand in front of the mirror and look at your
reflection.
You yourself will get disgusted.
లేక నీవు అప్పుడు కోపం వచ్చినప్పుడు బాగుగా నవ్వు, అప్పుడు కోపం తగ్గిపోతుంది.
When you get angry, laugh aloud, then the anger will subside.
అది నీకు చాలా కష్టంగా ఉంటుంటే,
even if it is difficult for you,
బాత్రూమ్ లో వెళ్ళు.
Go to the bathroom.
ట్యాప్ తిప్పు.
Open the tap.
ఆ నీరు పడుతుంటాది.
The water will be
flowing. ఆ నీరు పట్టమే ఒక స్వరంగా తీసుకుని దాంతో మంచిగా పాట పాడుకుంటురా, తప్ప కోపం తగ్గిపోతుంది.
Take the melodious sound of that water and start singing, then the anger will subside.
లేకపోతే ఒక కప్పు కోల్డ్ వాటర్ తీసుకుని త్రాగేసేసి,
take a cup of cold water and drink it.
కూర్చో,
sit down.
శాంతి పడిపోతుంది.
And everything will subside.
కనుకని ఈ శాంతికి తగినటువంటి మార్గాలు మనం అనుసరించాలి, కానీ కోపాన్ని కోపంగా పెంచుకుంటూ పోతే ప్లస్ 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 పెరిగిపోతుంది.
When you get angry, we should follow the path.
మాటకు మాట ఏమాత్రం కూడా మనం మాట్లాడకూడదు.
We should not enter into any type of argumentation.
తగ్గించుకుంటే అంత మన యొక్క మనస్సు శక్తి పెరిగిపోతుంది.
When we reduce our talk, our mental power increases.
మనోశక్తి పెరిగే కొలది కూడాను విచార శక్తి కూడాను పెరుగుతుంది.
When the mental power increases, our discrimination becomes strengthened.
విచార శక్తి పెరిగినప్పుడు మనము ఈ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ ఇండివిజువల్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ కాకుండా ఫండమెంటల్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ చేస్తాం.
When the discrimination becomes strong, it will become fundamental discrimination and not individual discrimination.
నిమిత్తమైనటువంటి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ కాకుండా జగత్ నిమిత్తమైనటువంటి యొక్క విశాలమైనటువంటి డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ రావాలి.
We should have a broad minded discrimination and not for just selfish discrimination.
ఈ విధంగా ఈ లేత వయసు నుంచి కూడాను చక్కగా మనము ఈ సద్భావాలు పెంచుకుంటూ రావాలి.
Even from the young age, we have to develop such good feelings.
I think some very, very powerful and beautiful points that Swami makes. And of course, the four points which we made last time about what you can do to control your anger. But Swami speaks something which I think probably is a place where we can take on from. As Swami says, what is the need to control the anger? The most important thing is, Swami says, that your thinking is actually, you're crippled. You're not able to think completely. And the beautiful point that Swami made is, you stop doing fundamental discrimination and you start doing individual discrimination. And the difference is that what is good for me and bad for me may not be necessarily universally good and bad. Right? Just like when I do a mistake and somebody comes and hits me, I mean, any form of pain doesn't seem to be good for me. Right? That's what the mind thinks. But
forget hitting. Even if it's verbally corrected, you may
exactly
get pain.
Exactly, criticize. Right? You feel pain, which maybe, my mind might see that this is something bad happening to me. But if you look at it as Swami says, fundamental discrimination, somebody who is doing something wrong is being corrected, which is actually a good thing. And I remember another beautiful chinakatha which Swami would say, about a farmer who owned a bull and a zamindar who also owned a bull. Right? So Swami would say that these two bulls get into a fight and the farmer's bull kills the zamindar's bull. So the farmer who sees this gets really scared and he's wondering, what is the zamindar going to do? He's a rich man, he's a very powerful man. So trembling, he goes in front of the zamindar and he tells him that, this is what has happened. Your bull has killed my bull. Right? The zamindar hears this, in the fear this man has actually turned the whole situation.
He has told it in the opposite way.
So saying, my bull has killed your bull, he says, your bull has killed my bull. So the zamindar goes into a philosophical dialogue. He says, when man kills man, what can you tell about beasts which have don't have the faculty of discrimination? We cannot be responsible for what, the bulls which we own do and all of that. And then he says, death is very common, everything which is born has to die and all of that. And then in the meanwhile, the farmer realizes what the error that he has done. He says, Zamindar, just hold on for a minute. Actually, it's my bull which has killed yours. And the moment he hears that, he starts shouting, how dare your bull kill mine? You better compensate for that and you have to give me so much money and all that. And Swami would say this and he'd say, see, this is because that person's interest is hurt. And you know, when your fundamental discrimination is actually taken away from you, you start thinking from what is good for me and what is bad for me, and that angers you. And Swami says on the other way around, when you get angry, you actually forget what is fundamental and what is individual. And I think that is the danger. And so beautifully Swami says, all the four techniques which he said about going away from the place, taking a walk for a full on, drinking some water, all of that meant that there is a stimulus for anger. You get angry and then you express anger, and invariably after you express anger, you start thinking. Right? That's the sequence which always happens. So Swami is saying, before you start expressing that anger, can you remove yourself from that place and start thinking? So that if not completely taken away, the expression of anger will at least be reduced, and the damage it can be caused, which it can cause, will be reduced to a certain extent.
And the fifth thing that he said, you know, he said first thing is go out for a walk. He said drink cold water or sing a bhajan or some devotional song in the tune of water falling from the tap in your bathroom. Or he says look at your face in the mirror. Swami also says start laughing loudly.
Right.
But there may be scenarios where all of this is difficult. You may have to be in the same place, and laughing loudly may seem embarrassing for you.
Might in even such, be misconstrued.
Yes. Even in such situations, Swami gives, if not anything else, keep your mouth shut. Don't open your mouth at all. Unless you're God. Because I remember another discourse which we made reference to last week. Swami says that a slip of the foot can be healed, but a slip of the tongue cannot be healed. So in this discourse clip, Swami beautifully says, if none of those you are able to do, at least refrain from speaking. And that is when he gives the reason for that. He says that if you speak, you will be speaking from an individual discrimination point of view, which is more or less selfish. Whereas fundamental discrimination has a broad vision, has a large heart. It's able to see the situation in its wholesomeness and in its entirety. So unless you are able to get out from the individual discriminating mood to a fundamental discriminating mood, don't speak. So these are the tips that Swami gives, and so beautifully in a span of 3 to 3.5 minutes, Swami summarized and powerfully narrated what we explained for about half an hour last week. Now we move ahead to the next stage where we are trying to see if we can control this anger from arising. I remember reading an episode from the popular book Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahamsa Yogananda. In that he writes about one episode where as he sat in his guru's hermitage for meditation, there was this mosquito that was inserting its hypodermic needle into his thigh, he says. There were a lot of mosquitoes and it bothered him a lot.
I think he's being absolutely precise in his description. Because generally we say mosquito bites, but a mosquito never bites.
Exactly. It pokes its needle into the skin and sucks blood. In fact, he writes, you know, at that point in time when he was seated there, this mosquito would bother him, and he would open his eyes to see that it should be bothering everybody. While it bothered everybody, his own guru Yukteswar Giri, you know, would be motionless in bliss, in a trance, and he envied him, and at the same time he thought that I can't meditate unless this mosquito stops biting me. But since he is practicing the principles of Patanjali, and in the principles of Patanjali, ahimsa is one of the important aspects, so he just cannot kill the mosquito. He says one day when he was meditating, this mosquito stung him, it sucked his blood so hard that the pain shot through. And instinctively, you know, his hand just went up to swat the mosquito. But right in time, he was able to, you know, tell himself that no, this is not what has to be done. Calm down. You know, don't, you have to practice ahimsa, so don't kill the mosquito. Now, even as he does this and he is mentally congratulating himself on being able to control this anger, his master says, you know, his master is in meditation, but he has opened his eyes and he is just telling Mukunda, why don't you finish the act? Why don't you just kill that mosquito? So he's shocked. He says, Master, what do you mean? Shouldn't I practice ahimsa? Then the master says, you've already killed the mosquito. You've already killed the mosquito. And so beautifully he says, you know, he says, Patanjali's meaning of ahimsa was the removal of the desire to kill. Patanjali, when he says ahimsa, it doesn't mean don't kill. It means you should not have the desire to kill. And he further explains, he says, man may be compelled to exterminate harmful creatures from time to time. It doesn't mean that if there's a cockroach in your home, you allow the cockroach to live, or if there's a mosquito there, you don't take precautions. You know, we put that mortine, we put that liquid which exterminates or drives away mosquitoes, we light up smoke. So, Yukteswar Giri says that you may be compelled to exterminate harmful creatures. There's nothing wrong in that. But it should not be arising from the desire to kill. You know, if we actually study ourselves, when a mosquito bites me and it causes a little bubble on my skin, I take great pleasure and delight in locating that mosquito and killing it. You know, I have done this. Nowadays we get electric bats. You just have to swing it against the mosquito and pop, it dies, you know. And when I examine my own life, many times because I have been bit by the mosquito, there is a kind of joy, if not at least relief, that this mosquito is dead. So, Yukteswar Giri makes it very clear. He says that Patanjali's meaning was a removal of the desire to kill. This world has been inconveniently arranged for literal practice of ahimsa. Man may be compelled to exterminate harmful creatures, but he is not under a similar compulsion to feel anger and animosity. So if you feel anger and animosity, it is a much, much greater sin than actually killing the mosquito. So he says that when you have already committed that sin, you have felt such anger and animosity towards that little mosquito, you may as well go ahead and kill it. So Paramahamsa Yogananda records this episode with great realization of wisdom, what his guru conferred on him. In fact, after this episode, it's very interesting. His guru says, if the mosquito is bothering you so much, who told you not to get a mosquito net? Go and buy a mosquito net and come. You know. And he says, wow, because his guru, actually, what happens is once he's so lost in thought and lost in meditation and there are mosquito biting his guru, Paramahamsa Yogananda goes and fetches a mirror and keeps it under his nostrils to check whether the guru is breathing. And he sees that there's a very faint breathing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that is when he realizes that at will his guru is able to transcend body consciousness, so it doesn't matter whether the mosquito bites him or not. But the beauty is, as Swami would say, man knows nothing but behaves as though he knows everything. God knows everything but behaves like he knows nothing. It's so beautiful, you know, you find the similarity between all the masters. So beautifully, Yukteswar Giri tells Paramahamsa Yogananda that you get a mosquito net. After that, you know, with a smile, he adds, please get one for me also, because if all of you put nets, then all the mosquitoes will focus and target only me. So get one net for me also, he says. So that was the incident, and this incident, I feel it highlights the need to control anger from arising itself, to remove the desire to kill, to remove that compulsion to get angry. That is more important than just controlling the expression of anger. While controlling the expression of anger is definitely a step forward, we should not think that if I am able to control the expression by either running away, as Swami said, or drinking water or going to a mirror, it's not that we have achieved the ultimate. That's only the first step. We have to move towards controlling the arousal of anger.
I think at the risk of going away from what we're talking about, when you're talking about it is not wrong in protecting yourself from the insects and other pests which trouble us. Now, Swami would say this. It's not wrong that you get rid of some of these things. In fact, I remember when, I think in the year 2004 or 5, when the former Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee was visiting, he was supposed to be staying in the guest house.
Srinivas guest house.
So one day Swami came to the bhajan hall, and that time the boys were sitting there. The morning bhajan group was there. And very, very solemnly Swami told, I have a very important task for all of you. Will you boys do? I mean, who would say no? And all the boys were very eager. They said, see, Vajpayee is coming. He's going to stay in the guest house. He is very scared of lizards. So I want all of you to go to Srinivas guest house and catch all the lizards and send them out. And, you know, they all had the task of going and catching lizards one by one. You know, in different ways, they got buckets and they got vessels through which they will, you know, scare the lizard into going into the bush or whatever it is. And, you know, very carefully, Swami is telling, you know, don't harm them, just chase them out so that, you know, the Prime Minister can stay comfortably. I mean, even a task of getting rid of pests in the house becomes a task which is so sacred. And I think that is the beauty, you know, it's not about letting your home or office be infested by all of this. But as so beautifully put, you know, nonviolence is not the desire to cause harm. And you know, because many of our activities without our knowledge, we constantly cause harm to so many beings. In fact, there's another beautiful incident where, you know, in Kode, there were these small cockroaches which would come, because Swami goes only once in 2 months, right?
Once in a year for 2 months.
Right,
yeah.
Once in a year for 2 months, and it's so difficult to maintain such a huge bungalow, and you know, some of these small cockroaches would come some way or the other. So what they'd done, they'd taken these chalk pieces which keep away the cockroach.
Chemical, huh?
And they'd drawn these at the door of Swami's room, right? And the next day Swami comes and tells the boys in the session. He said, you know, this fellow, Swami names the boy who is sleeping in Swami's room. He said he took that thing and he drew lines outside Swami's room.
We call it Lakshman Rekha.
Right, Lakshman Rekha. And Swami is saying, I was sitting there on the cot and I was seeing this cockroach which was trying to enter. And you know, it tasted that whatever white powder, and it suffered so much. I got so upset, I called that fellow. I told him, get a wet cloth and wipe everything now. Why are you troubling all these insects? But, you know, such beautiful memories. But, I mean, not to take away from the profundity of that statement which was made by Yukteswar Giri.
That, once again, I'll just repeat it because it's so beautiful. He says, this world is inconveniently arranged for a literal practice of ahimsa. Man may be compelled to exterminate harmful creatures, but he is not under similar compulsion to feel anger or animosity. So, therefore, you know, I'm sure there are multiple such incidents. I remember narrating an incident in the last satsang where in Bombay that episode had happened and so much of anger had arisen in me. And that is what I realized. You know, when I get so angry, even later on thinking of the same episode, it's causing so much damage within me. The pain that slap I received from that person, that pain was off in another 1 hour or 2 hours, you know. So, the pain that I got from the expression of anger was already gone. But the pain that I was getting for years because of the anger being within me, that is what, you know, bothered me so much. Therefore, it really, really becomes so important that we control the arousal of anger. Focus more on that rather than just simple focusing on the expression of the anger.
But the beautiful thing is, you know, even something like what Swami Yogananda was saying, that even when being harmed, to even control the expression of anger is actually great.
Correct.
You know, the mosquito biting and feeling that, okay, I mean, I'm really irritated by it, but I'll hold myself back. Even for that physical control, it needs a lot of effort. I think that's what we spoke about last week. But sometimes it feels cruel that, you know, when you are doing your best, you know, God comes and says, the master comes and says, no, this is not enough. You already thought of it. You've already done the crime. You know, that feels very, very insensitive sometimes. But I think that's where the message lies. In fact, I remember another beautiful incident which one of our alumna of the Anantapur campus would share. One day they were, she and her parents were having an interview. And Swami looked at her mother, and Swami pointing to this student said, you know, she gets very angry. You know, too much anger. So the mother was a little surprised. Mother said, but Swami, that is not one of the problems she has. You know, she's not a person who loses her temper so much. I don't think she gets so angry. Swami said, no, I know. She gets very, very angry. And Swami said, you know what she does when she gets angry? She wipes the whole prayer all from one end to the other. You know? And this girl, when she heard this, she felt very upset. He said, Swami, you have told in your discourses that when you get angry, you have to use that energy, like what Swami said, you know, run, walk a furlong, sing a bhajan, sing loudly, whatever it is. So she said, I'm doing the same thing. The energy, I'm using it for something which is non-harmful to anybody else. I'm using it to clean the prayer hall. And now Swami is pointing at that and saying that that's a mistake. Okay, and she got very upset and she did not speak to Swami in that interview or whatever. She wanted to show Swami that she was angry with Swami. But then she said she came away, and much later when she was reflecting on those on that episode which happened, and then it struck her that, see, yes, what she did was right. But it was right only for that stage. As Swami was saying, it's not about just controlling what the expression of anger is, but the next level, you have to graduate to that level where you don't give scope for the anger to arise at all. And Swami was hinting to her that that is what I want. Until you come to that stage, I mean, it's like saying that, you know, I've just now I have graduated from 5th standard and now they expect me to graduate 6th standard. That seems to be so cruel. I've spent one full year mastering the syllabus of 5th standard. But spirituality is all about that. You know, you have to keep raising the bar and you have to keep trying to achieve that.
In fact, Swami gives the example of one woman who showed exemplary control over anger. In fact, Swami calls her as the epitome of kshama. And this is Draupadi that Swami speaks about. You know, I was reminded how in multiple occasions Swami would often choke with emotion speaking about Draupadi as a great Pativrata, one who sincerely followed her husband's. It's amazing how he calls her a Pativrata, because one of the prerequisites for a Pativrata is often considered as having only one husband. And Draupadi is Panchali. She has got 5 husbands and yet Swami calls her as the greatest Pativrata. But apart from that, Swami speaks about the episode where after the Mahabharata war, Ashwatthama goes and promises Duryodhana that he is going to slay all the Pandavas. And at that time, he sees how an owl is attacking a group of crows at night. And he gets the wicked idea that, let me do it the adharmic way, because there is no way I can beat the Pandavas in the dharmic way. So he attacks the Pandava camp at night. And when everybody is asleep, he starts by killing Drushtadyumna, who is responsible for the death of his father Drona. And then one by one, he sees the 5 Pandavas sleeping there, he beheads them, kills them. It is only the next day they realize that they are not actually the Pandavas, but the Upa Pandavas, the children of each of the Pandavas through Draupadi. So in one night, a mother loses all her 5 children and Draupadi is distraught. So when the Pandavas get to know this, especially Bhima and Arjuna, they go catch hold of Ashwatthama and drag him to Draupadi's presence. At that point in time, you know, Ashwatthama is helpless. He's absolutely at her command. And Draupadi can do anything she wishes. But, you know, I don't know the poem that Swami says. So beautifully Swami sings a poem wherein Draupadi falls at the feet of Ashwatthama. And in the verse she says that, my children, they were helpless. They have not harmed you in any way. They are innocent. How could you kill them, you know? Because of that, I am having extreme pain in my heart. Now please tell me, how should I remove that pain from my heart? This is the way Draupadi pleads from a person who has done this to her, you know? When she could have simply told Bhima or Arjuna, behead this fellow also. But she doesn't do that. In fact, Swami goes on to say that seeing this scene, both Arjuna and Bhima are enraged. They're enraged and they go to chop away Ashwatthama's neck. At that time, you know, Draupadi says, oh Arjuna, oh Bhima, it is wrong to kill. In fact, I think Swami narrates how it is wrong to kill 5 kinds of people. One who is intoxicated, one who is asleep, one who is seeking your refuge, if one is a woman, or if one is afraid and fearful. These are the 5 kinds of people Draupadi says that they should never be killed. And she says, now Ashwatthama is in such state of fear. And the act that he did at that point in time was when he was intoxicated in anger. Our scriptures say that these 5 kinds of people should not be killed. He's falling into 2 such categories. How can we kill him? And in fact, if she says that, I am feeling such pain because I lost my children. Ashwatthama's mother is still there. How will she feel when her son is killed like this? And Swami in that discourse says that Draupadi had not a trace of anger at all. She was of course filled with remorse. She was extremely sad. Her heart was reeling with pain. But there was not a trace of anger. And that's why Swami calls her an epitome of kshama. You know, these ideals look like impossible to emulate and impossible to even believe. But that is the goal that Swami sets for us. So when we think that we have graduated 5th grade and what are you expect me to do 6th grade, Swami is expecting us to graduate in masters with honors. And those are the ideals that he places before us. When you spoke about the alumna, I was reminded of this episode because you spoke about Anantapur alumnus, and Swami presents one woman as the epitome of absolute mastery over anger and an epitome of kshama.
And in fact, when we were talking about this Draupadi episode, we were mentioning, you know, how when the whole source of that whole war happens in the Kaurava court. I mean, the sequence of events is very interesting. Because there, you know, Krishna has come and protected our honor. Krishna has shown that if anything really untoward is to happen to you, I will come to protect you. But even after that experience, she actually starts cursing, you know, Dushasana and Duryodhana, and she says that let my husbands do something by which my anger will be subsided as a form of revenge.
Yes, right? Tear open Dushasana's chest and bring me blood for me to apply on my hair.
Right, until then
break the thighs of Duryodhana. Yes.
And all of that is actually words of a really enraged woman, right? So much anger. In fact, that is the cause for the entire battle.
War.
Right, the whole war of the Kurukshetra and the dastardly act of Ashwatthama, all of that comes because of that. But I think that is why Swami speaks so highly of Draupadi. She was not somebody who was born with that quality. She was somebody who acquired that quality, because, you know, when she says that spare Ashwatthama, she says, see, I know the grief of a mother who has lost her children. Ashwatthama is the only son for her mother, and if he is to die, I can only imagine what pain the mother will go through. I think that is the growth of a devotee, where even when she knew that God is going to protect me and God is going to stand by my side, she said, I will take revenge. But here, there's no such thought. There's nothing like Krishna is going to bring my children back to life or anything like that. She's only thinking that it has happened to me, it is giving me pain. I don't want somebody else to experience the pain I am experiencing. I think that is the growth of that devotee, and that is a graduation, as you were saying. You know, it is not about controlling your anger, but it is about graduating to the point where, you become a reflection of God's compassion itself.
And though she was unaware at that point in time, later indeed that's what happens. Krishna resurrects from the dead a child so that the lineage can continue, and that is the story of Parikshit, which I think we will be taking up next week because it is part of our Bhagavata Vahini Satsang. So, how is it that Draupadi achieved this? Draupadi was able to go to the root of the anger and eliminate it so that there is no birth of anger. And that is what we will be discussing after this little break. So, dear listeners, don't go anywhere. After this little break, we will continue with what is the root of this anger and how do we try to eliminate the birth of anger.
Shri Kripa Kari Shrimam Kari Sai Shwari
Shri Kari Kripa Kari
Thank you.
कृपा करी क्षेमं करी साईश्वरी.
Welcome back, dear listeners. After that beautiful, melodious, heartwarming bhajan, which Prem placed it there so perfectly, because even as the bhajan started, we were wondering whether it is in glory of Draupadi, because those are the qualities that are being extolled there. Of course, it is the quality of kshama, forbearance, and love and selflessness that make us divine. So it is not also wrong to say that this bhajan is also singing the glory of Draupadi, who was an epitome of all these virtues. We were speaking about how we have to control the arousal of anger, the birth of anger within us. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna beautifully traces a kind of, you know, reaction, chain reaction, reaction cycle, which in which anger is a very, very powerful link. This is from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I think it is the 62nd and 63rd shloka. I may be wrong. But it's definitely from the second chapter where Krishna says, Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsa Sangasteshopa Jayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kamat Krodo Bijayate Krodat Bhavati Sammohaha Sammohat Smriti Vibhrama Smriti Bhramshat Buddhinasho Buddhinashat Pranashyati. This means that when we allow the senses to wander on the worldly things, on the worldly objects, on external objects, then because of that we develop an attachment towards worldly objects. That attachment gives rise to desire within us. And the non-fulfillment of such a desire gives rise to anger. And then the shloka goes on to say that this anger leads to delusion. Delusion leads to loss of discrimination. And once loss of discrimination sets in, total destruction is guaranteed. So anger, we realize, is one of the midway stages. You know, it's one of the intermediaries, as we would say in chemistry. It's not the raw material, it's not the product, it's one of the intermediary stages. Anger is just an intermediary which results in absolute total destruction. So if we trace back in this pathway, in this chain, we realize that it starts with senses wandering on external objects, senses wandering on worldly objects. Therefore, though on the face of it, when we make the sentence, it doesn't look like it's connected, to actually stop the arousal of anger, it is very important that we focus our senses within, that we focus all our senses on God.
And, you know, what this suggests is a very important thing, that many times we are in situations where we get angry, but actually we don't have an avenue to express that anger. Many times when we were in school, probably, let's say, our teachers giving us a real sound thrashing, and we are standing and listening, you know, amidst the class, there is no way you can shout back at the teacher, or no way you can throw anything, and you're extremely angry, and you don't have an expression of anger. So it is not about just controlling that expression of anger, because many people are very good at that. And they literally bide their time and they actually strike back when, you know, when they have a better opportunity to do that. And what's the whole point? Because as the, you know, this beautiful shloka was saying, that anger is there, as long as it is there, it is going to lead to this sequence of events, eventually leading to your downfall.
So you may just because you're able to right? control, scheme up and take revenge later on, it doesn't make you any better than a person who expresses anger straight away.
Right, absolutely. So at some point or the other, you need to start this exercise of trying to root out anger itself. Because expression of anger, yes, it is very important, because as we spoke last time, when we get angry, when we start dwelling too much on that, our discrimination gets polluted and we're not able to speak properly, we're not able to decide properly. We say things which are very hurtful and which eventually we regret much later. All of these things happen in certain forms of expression of anger, but anger in all forms is dangerous when it comes spontaneously and without our control.
Absolutely. And I think the statement you made in the end, saying when it comes spontaneously without our control, that's important, because when within control, when anger is brought out, it becomes an instrument to be used for various good and noble purposes as well, that we shall discuss in the next part. Because as of now, we have come to the part of stopping the arousal of anger. And I think this logical sequence gives us a hint that we can possibly make use of logic in order to stop anger. See, one thing that becomes very clear is nobody is the cause for anger. I am the cause for my anger. Because in the chain of event, nowhere you see an external agency being brought in. It's all within my own control. You know, whether my senses see outward things, whether I get attached to them, whether I start getting a strong desire, and whether I get angry when the desire is not fulfilled. So, the root cause of anger is myself. And when I am the cause of anger, it becomes actually a thing to celebrate, because it means that stopping that anger from coming is totally in my control. It doesn't have to depend on anything else at all. It doesn't matter on how you behave with me or how somebody else behaves with me, because anger is coming from me. So whether you're good or bad, there are instances where even good people become subject of anger. So it's not that if you're good, you don't receive anger. It's not that if you're bad, every time you receive anger, because anger is something of my own property. So if I decide to be in a noble and good state of mind, I don't get angry even on a person who is supposed to, who is apparently a bad person. And if I am in a bad frame of mind, I get angry on a person who is apparently a good person also. So this is a very empowering kind of situation, because we realize that anger arises from us. So this actually will make us think as to what can I do at that point in time, logically, so that the anger doesn't arise. Because the second point also that we have to keep in mind is, when anger is arising from me, even if I express it, this is what we discussed last week, anger is like an acid which harms the vessel in which it is stored more than the vessel on which it is poured. So even if I express it, it's not that I have been rid of anger, because that anger arose in me, it has damaged me at least equally, if not more, compared to the person on whom I have expressed the anger. So these two points, one, that I am the source of anger, second, that anger is damaging to me, I think these two are very powerful logical points that will assist us in ensuring that we don't get angry in the first place at all.
And probably if we can put it in stage forms, you know, I mean, if you look at a person who gets angry and say that you should not get angry at all, somebody comes and hits you, that spontaneous outburst of anger should not be there at all. It's very difficult, because the truth is we are not in control of ourselves. So putting it from that first clip which we played, you know, it is like probably the one who is nowhere near controlling his anger, or isn't probably, will fail a course in anger management, is someone who, there is a stimulus, that person gets angry, that person expresses anger and probably does not regret getting angry at all. So from that, I think what we need to understand is, when you say that anger only arises from within, you realize that every form of expression of anger or anger itself is bad. I think that acknowledgement is the first step. And as Swami was saying, the third is when you control the expression of anger through those four or five techniques which Swami spoke about. But controlling the expression of anger is, like somebody said, it's like a pressure cooker. You know, you don't let the pressure go out. It's just a matter of time before the cooker bursts, or it bursts into a whistle. And that's what happens to most of us. When we don't address the anger, at some point it actually blows up.
Really. In a very beautiful manner, Swami had told that what you should have is suppression and not suppression.
Right. Exactly. So suppression of anger, or the suppression of expression of anger, is dangerous. That's why Swami brings the next point. When you suppress the expression of anger, don't leave it at that, but start thinking. And that thinking should involve this sequence which Swami is saying, that in the Bhagavad Gita shloka, where does the anger arise from? So now I'm getting angry, and where is the anger that I'm having right now arising from? Is it because my expectations are not being met? Is that because I need an image to be held of me, and that is not being held when someone criticizes me? Or I want something and that is not being given to me, and I'm getting angry. When you acknowledge that the anger is from inside, you can now start analyzing where that anger is actually coming from.
In fact, I'm reminded of a beautiful analysis that Swami himself performed in the midst of a discourse. And rather than we sharing it, I think it's best that we play it for our listeners. Once again, this is from the same discourse on the 24th of May 1992 during the summer course, where Swami did this kind of a logical analysis to show that no situation is worth that we get angry.
చక్కని ఒక ఉదాహరణము
గుడ్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్
నీకు ఎవరో ఏమో అన్నారు
Somebody scolded you.
నీకు కోపం వచ్చేసింది.
You get angry.
ఈ కోపం వచ్చినప్పుడు తక్షణమే నీవు చర్య తీసుకోవద్దు.
But immediately do not react.
వాడు అన్నటువంటి దోషాలు నాలో ఉన్నవా లేదా?
Try to do introspection.
ఒకవేళ ఆ దోషాలే నాకు ఉంటుంటే, నాలో ఉంటుంటే, నేను వాడిపైన కోపటం నాదే తప్పు కదా.
If those blemishes are in me, getting angry with him is my own mistake.
వాడు అన్నటువంటి దోషాలే నాలో లేకపోతే నేను వాడితో ఎందుకు కోపడాలి?
If the blemishes pointed out by the other man are not in me, why should I be angry with him?
ఈ విధంగా విచారణకు అవకాశం ఇచ్చి విచారణకు యోచన చేస్తూ వస్తే ఈ కోపం చల్లారిపోతుంది.
When you inquire in this way, your anger will subside.
విద్యార్థులారా,
స్టూడెంట్స్,
చక్కని ఆదర్శము నాకు నేనే.
The great title for myself is myself.
My life is my message.
My life is my message.
ఎంతో మంది నన్ను తిడుతూ ఉంటారు.
Many people admonish
me. ఎంతో మంది వర్ణిస్తుంటారు.
Many people praise me.
కానీ తిట్టిన దానికి నేను కుంగను, వర్ణించిన దానికి పొంగను.
I don't blot with praise or get depressed with censure.
ఎందుకంటే నాలో ఉన్నటువంటివి నా ఎదురుగా అన్నప్పటికీ నేను ఏమాత్రం యోచించనక్కర్లేదు.
I don't worry about things which are not in me.
నాలో లేనివి ఎక్కడ చెప్పినప్పటికీ నేను విచారించనక్కర్లేదు.
ఇఫ్ ది బ్లెమిషెస్ పాయింట్ అవుట్ బై అదర్స్ ఆర్ నాట్ ఇన్ మీ, ఐ నీడ్ నాట్ వరీ.
నాలో లేనివన్నీ కూడా వారు చెప్పుకోవటం చేత నేను విచారించవలసిన అవసరం ఏమిటి?
దేర్ ఇస్ నో నీడ్ ఫర్ మీ టు వరీ ఇఫ్ ది పాయింట్ అవుట్ బ్లెమిషెస్ విచ్ ఆర్ నాట్ ఇన్ మీ.
దీనికి ఒక చిన్న ఉదాహరణ.
హియర్ ఇస్ అ స్మాల్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్.
ఓ బుట్టదల సాయిబాబా, బుట్టదల సాయిబాబా అంటే దానిని నేను తప్పక తీసుకోవాలి.
ఇఫ్ సంబడి కాల్స్ Baba is a basket-haired Baba, he has to accept it.
నాకు బుట్టతల ఉంది.
I have got this basket full
of hair. ఇది నాదే అని నేను తీసుకోవాలి.
Therefore, I'll accept it.
నాలో లేనటువంటి దానిని ఓ పట్టతల సాయిబాబా, పట్టతల సాయిబాబా అంటే ఆ పట్టతల నాకు లేదు, నేను ఎందుకు తీసుకోవాలి?
If they call me bald-headed Sai Baba, I need not accept it because I am not bald-headed.
కాలం నాలో లేనటువంటి దోషము నా ఎదురుగా వచ్చి అన్నప్పటికీ నేను దాన్ని స్వీకరించను.
If anybody comes in front of me and admonishes me, if that blemish is not in me,
సరి అయినటువంటి డిటర్మినేషన్,
దట్ ఈస్ రియల్ డిటర్మినేషన్.
నీ పైన నీవు ఆత్మవిశ్వాసం కలిగి ఉంటుండాలి.
యూ హావ్ టు హావ్ సెల్ఫ్ కాన్ఫిడెన్స్.
ఆత్మవిశ్వాసం లేకుండా ఎవరేమన్నప్పటికీ కుంగటము పొంగటము, కుంగటము పొంగటం అయిపోతే ఇది కేవలం ఏరోప్లేన్ బంప్స్ మాదిరి అయిపోతుంది.
Without this self-confidence, will wax and wane, and that is like bumps and
jumps. మొట్టమొదటి ఆత్మవిశ్వాసాన్ని పెంచుకోండి విద్యార్థులు.
Students, first and foremost, to develop self-confidence.
So that is a very beautiful logic. One of the major causes where we get angry, we discussed, was when somebody criticizes us. And Swami is saying, when somebody criticizes you, first analyze whether the criticism is true or false. And if it is true, why should you get angry? You should actually be grateful to the person who pointed out a flaw in you. So be grateful to that person and correct that flaw in you. And then he says, if it is false, again why do you have to get angry? If it is false, you don't bother at all. It is that person's problem, it is his headache. If he has got a wrong opinion, you just leave it. And Swami gives his own example. If somebody comes and calls me a basket-headed one, I should not get angry because I am really a basket-headed one. But at the same time, if somebody comes and calls me a bald-headed one, once again I need not get angry because I am not a bald-headed one. I think, see, this kind of logic, when somebody criticizes, it rules out all situations when I can get angry if somebody criticizes me. There is no need to get angry at all if anybody criticizes me, because if it is true, I need to accept it and be grateful. If it is false, I need to just discard it and be grateful and cool.
Right. And the important thing is, you know, you are dealing with, as we were saying, anger itself. I mean, otherwise you will just be putting away the expression and you will just be waiting for the chance when you can probably make a remark like that at the other person. I mean, let's be honest, that's what happens to most of us, right?
Correct.
You know, we are in situations, we will probably give a very smiling face because, you know, you have to show that you're a Swami's devotee, you're a Swami student. You
then
don't
we'll
get
bite
angry.
By our time.
Right, but when we get a chance, then, you know, a snide remark will come, a sarcastic remark will come there, because that's a sign that the anger is always there. And you know, there's this very beautiful story which I read sometime back. Someone had forwarded it to me.
Mm-hmm.
There is this monk who wants to do meditation. And he realizes that wherever he's sitting, somebody is disturbing him or the other. So he decides to take a boat, mm-hmm. go to the middle of the river and anchor himself there and sit there and do meditation. And nobody's going to disturb you there right in the middle of the river, right? So that's what he does. So right in the middle of that river for hours together, this monk is sitting there and doing meditation. Just then, somebody bumps into that boat. So someone who has come in another boat has bumped into that boat. So he gets very angry, but he doesn't open his eye. Right? He's sitting there because, you know, one thing is somebody comes, let's say walking on the road, somebody comes and bumps into you or brushes by you. You get angry, but you wait for a moment for that person to apologize. If he apologizes or she apologizes, you're fine with that, right? But if it doesn't happen, then your anger actually gets a little more aggravated, right? So literally this person is waiting there and getting angry, and who is this, you know, coming and disturbing me? And when he finally opens his eye, he finds that it's an empty boat.
Hmm.
That empty boat has kind of got loosened from the banks of the river. It's come and bumped into him. And at that moment, of course, the message goes that he gets realization, because he understands that the anger is actually within him, and whatever happens around him is actually pointing out to him that the anger is there within. So I think what Swami was saying, that the two scenarios when somebody comes and criticizes you, either it's true or it's false. If it is true, accept it. If it's false, there's no reason for you to be angry about it. But either way, we get angry, and I think that's a sign that there is anger inside. And when there is anger inside, I think the source is what that Bhagavad Gita shloka so beautifully says, that every time you get angry, it's a pointer to you that you have these issues, that you are attached to something, that you are desirous of something, that you're greeding for something more, or you're disappointed that you don't have something that you're seeking.
You know, in that sense, every situation or every problem that makes us angry is actually a messenger sent to us by God or by the universe, pointing out to us our weakness. You know, if at all I get angry when I am disturbed when I am in meditation, I will see that such situations happen more and more and more in my life. It is a message from the universe that this is your weakness. If you want to control anger, you have to, you know, not get angry when you get disturbed while you are meditating. That is what happened to that person. In fact, he had to go to the middle of the river so that nobody disturbs him. Just imagine, meditation is supposed to be that wherein, as we saw in the case of Yukteswar Giri, there are multiple mosquitoes that are sucking blood out of you and you are lost in your trance, because meditation takes you beyond body consciousness. And in the case of the person in the story that you mentioned, it is almost as if the universe or God, whatever you may call that force, is trying to indicate to him that, listen, your meditation is not serving the purpose, because anything, a thing that doesn't bother an ordinary person on the road, seems to be bothering you. I remember once one of our teachers was saying that when you start a spiritual practice, the first stage is you become hypersensitive. Everything disturbs you. You get irritated and angry at everything and everybody else. He says, don't get discouraged with that. That is a good step, because one of the characteristic traits of a spiritual person is having an heightened sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how you are able to curb that sensitivity when it comes to things towards yourself, and express more that same sensitivity when it comes to things related to others. That is what Swami was referring to as individual discrimination and fundamental discrimination. So that sensitivity is needed. It's just about how you learn to handle that sensitivity. That's your spiritual progress. So don't get discouraged when you get this sensitivity. That person should not get discouraged that, you know what, whenever I sit to meditate, the slightest thing disturbs me. No. You just have to realize that that is not the end of meditation. You have to go ahead. And as he discovered, everything else in his life is an empty boat. I'm reminded of one little episode when we had gone to coastal Karnataka. There's this famous Kollur Mookambika temple, which is supposed to be a Shakti Pita and a very powerful deity that Devi is.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was very eager to visit that temple, and I felt, why should we go to the temple? I don't want to go to the temple, because, you know, we know Swami. Swami is the ultimate. It is true that we are loyal to this name and form, but Swami would himself say, Yendaro Mahanubhavulu Andariku Vandanamulu. If we are able to see divinity in all, it's wonderful. Having gone till there, nothing I would have lost by going to the temple. But anyway, since my wife wanted it, we went there. When we went there, you know, I saw that there was a long queue and people were waiting, some were taking tokens. So I started commenting, oh, so now you have to pay money to see God. See where, how Swami used to give free. I don't want, what is this kind? You know, I went on commenting. So my wife was saying that, you know, whether you want or not, I want to have darshan, so let's go. We finally were, when we were in the line, one person came and he picked me out and he said, no, you come out. I said, for what? He said, you can't go in with your 3/4. See, mm-hmm. It was near a beach. We had gone to a beach, so I was wearing a 3/4. And I had my t-shirt on. He said, this way you can't go. You can't enter the temple. And this actually made me more angry. You said, what do you mean? I asked, what do you mean you can't go? I have come from so far. Now what? Just because I'm wearing a 3/4, you're telling I can't go. He said, yeah, you can't go. I said, this is how you treat devotees. He said, sir, if you don't know the rules, what we can do, you can't go in. And you know, I got upset, but he was calm and he just didn't allow me. He walked away and I stood there, and that is when, you know, I felt repentant. I said, Devi, I've been telling that I don't want to see you. I don't want to see you. And I think you're just fulfilling. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. I said, I don't want to see you. And you're saying, fine, don't see me. I felt very repentant. I said, no, I'm very sorry. You know, I would love to have a darshan having come this far. I want to see you, but I'm not able to see you. And I also said that, you know, I think it was wrong on my part to get angry on that person, because what he was doing is his duty only. I was reminded of our own sevadals here. Many times they do their duty and they get shouted upon for doing their duty, but they are simply doing their duty. So I just felt that as I empathize with the sevadals in Prashanti Nilayam, I should also empathize with these people, because they are also simply doing their duty. And honestly, I became calm. The instant I became calm, the same person comes and he hands me a red silk dhoti. Mm-hmm. I said, what is this? He says, sir, you just raise up your shorts a little more, tie this dhoti and you walk in, no problem. This is my dhoti, but you use it. I felt so touched. And you know, it was a silk dhoti and it is red. Red is supposed to be dear one to the goddess.
Right.
But that's what happened. I walked in, my parents, my wife, they were all surprised to see me. And that too in that kind of a phenomenal, fantastic dhoti. I had a wonderful darshan, came out. He was waiting, he received the dhoti. I thought, you know, maybe this person, he does this kind of a thing. And I thought he'll be asking for about 20 rupees, 50 rupees, whatever. So I asked him, yeah, how much for that dhoti? He said, no, sir, that's for you to have darshan. What is this? No. Just with a smile, he walked away. He didn't even take a rupee from me. You know, that episode, it taught me that whenever we come across a situation where we get irritated or angry or upset, it is actually a message coming from the universe and God. That person or that situation is simply the messenger. There's no use getting angry on the messenger. In the olden days, this used to be the custom. This used to be the tradition. If a messenger comes to the court and says, my king says you're arrogant, if you don't stop your arrogance, your neck will be chopped. Whatever the messenger says, the king, even if he gets angry and upset, he can't touch the messenger. Because it's not the fault of the messenger. The messenger is simply sincerely communicating the message. So too is every such situation in our life. We should realize that it's simply communicating the message. There is no use of getting angry, upset and harming the messenger. In fact, it is against dharma to harm the messenger. That is what Vibhishna tells Ravana, saying that you can't harm Hanuman. Because all said and done, whatever he may say, he is simply a messenger. I feel this kind of acceptance also helps us in ensuring that we don't react badly to a situation, and also ensures that we remove our anger and remain calm.
And I think, going back to what I was saying about the different levels at which we are, I think most of us, we're not completely in the state where we have controlled the expression of anger, but we have situations where we have, we have figured out that here there is no point in getting angry. Because this kind of reasoning we have done, thanks to Swami, the way he has taught us, as you explained, even in the ashram, we have some rules, and that rules has been placed by Swami, and we know that this is Swami's rule. So even if it irritates us, even if it upsets us, we follow it, because that's the respect we show Swami. And if we bring that message into everyday life, It's easy to do it inside the ashram, because every rule has been literally been placed by Swami in some way or the other. In fact, some of the rules which we think that has been put by others was also been, either put directly by Swami or approved by Swami after, consideration. But if we can go through everyday life and say that, nothing like this will happen to me if Swami does not want to give me a message. Which is the truth. Mm. If we come to that, I think that is the next graduation which we'll have. But the beauty is, Swami, the way he narrated it in that clip itself, Swami said, you get angry. Swami did not say you don't get angry. You get angry, but then you reason out with yourself and then the anger goes away. I think the next step is when there is a stimuli, and before you start getting angry, you start doing that thinking. And I think that is the level which we all have to try to do. Where you get angry, you express the anger, you calm down and then think. Then you come to the point where you get angry, but before you express, you start thinking. And you come to the point where before you get angry, you start thinking.
I was reminded of what Silaser told me once, He's been a physics teacher, but more than that, he's been a teacher for many lessons of life. He was once speaking to all of us and he said that if somebody comes and slaps me on my cheek, what do you think will be my first response? If a student comes and slaps me on my cheek, what he said was, my first response will be to do nothing. I will just walk away from that student and go to my room. And he then said, see, I believe that Swami is the most loving being in the universe. I believe that Swami is the most powerful being in the whole universe. So if he is the most loving, if he loves me the most, and if he is the most powerful, how can anything ever touch me without him willing? If something is able to harm me, harm in quotes, because I am thinking it's a harm, it's because Swami is not strong enough to protect me from that thing or situation. Or Swami is strong enough to protect me, but he doesn't love me that much. So he let anything happen to this fellow, no. But if my faith is firm that he loves me as well as he is the most powerful, then it must be something that he has allowed to happen. If he has allowed it to happen, it must be something for my good. So instantly when something like this happens, my first thought is, what is there in this for me to learn? What is the good that I have to, what is the good that I have to receive from this? That is the way my thought process goes, and it was very inspiring. He said that, if at all I get angry, again though it seems disconnected, it simply means I don't have faith in Swami. I don't have faith in either in His omnipotence or I don't have faith in His magnificent love. It only means one of these two things. So as you rightly said, if we can start with this process of thinking and feeling when we come across a situation or a person who is upsetting us or making us angry, I think that would be a phenomenal level to reach.
And that's the beautiful thing, you know, even as you were speaking of that and what the going back to that Gita Shloka, many times, you know, when you're having a fever or some kind of a flu or something, or let's say you're undergone a surgery, and sometimes after taking a few medicines, you get a high temperature. And the doctor will come and say, oh, you're having temperature, that's a good sign. Right? Because we always say that running a high temperature is fever and it's not good. But sometimes the doctor comes and says it's a good sign because it's a sign that something is happening inside. So I think in that sense, now you look at anger. Anger is a sign that something is wrong inside and it's identifying that. Otherwise, something can be wrong inside. And if the situation around is so conducive that it never makes you angry, you actually go through this, what the Bhagavad Gita says, your attachment to objects, your desire, your wanting something, greed, all of that will remain inside without being identified, and it will go on. So in that sense, I think you come to a point where it's not about looking at anger as an object which has to be, you know, repelled or thrown away. You look at anger and say that, okay, anger also has a place. And now when you come to the point where you have, don't get angry, as Swami said, which I don't know when it's going to happen for all of us, but also give respect to that quality of anger because God has created that for a certain purpose. I think now you come to the state where even that becomes a tool, the state which we saw Swami being, living in.
Absolutely. Where anger is used by Swami as a tool. But you know, before we go to that, Prem, I just want to highlight one little aspect that we have spoken throughout last week as well as today. Just to highlight it so that we remember, which is the power of forgiveness. You know, last week I was saying about how when I got angry on that person in Bombay, for years together it kept, you know, causing mental anguish for me. Till a point where I said, you know, I forgive him for what he did. And when I forgave the person, it was not some large-hearted act on my part. As we said, two points to remember logically is that anger arises from me and anger harms me more than others. When I forgive, I am actually forgiving not out of my compassion on somebody, but I am forgiving so that I am at peace.
Absolutely.
And that is what stands out even in Draupadi's case. Kshama is a very broad term in which forgiveness is also one part. Because when we say Kshama, we use it for tolerance. Kshama also means forgiveness. So Draupadi is forgiving. And it is not like she is compassionate on Ashwatthama. Yes, she is compassionate. But compassion is just one of the symptoms. All this she is doing because she has evolved as a devotee and she has realized that there are certain things I have to do if I have to keep my peace of mind. For the sake of my own peace of mind and for me to be peaceful and at equilibrium always, I need to do it. So, forgiveness is one thing that we have to highlight, and forgiveness is something that we do not as an act of compassion, but as an act of self-preservation, as an act of maintaining our own sanity and peace of mind.
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, there is this famous quote which Nelson Mandela is supposed to have said. You know, we know the story of Nelson Mandela. 27 years he was imprisoned, and all that for his fight for the cause of removing apartheid from the country. I mean, now if you look at the practice of apartheid, we know that it's injustice.
Apartheid, right? Yeah.
Apartheid. We know that it's injustice, but for somebody who is fighting against that injustice to be in prison for 27 years is clearly an act of, an injustice against yourself, right? But when he walked out of prison, I think probably we should read out that quote which is so famous, which Nelson Mandela is, supposed to have said when he was released finally, where he says, As I walked out the door towards the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew that if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison. Which means he said that I am forgiving not because, I'm great or I'm superior and compassionate. He says, I'm walking out of prison today. If I don't forgive the people who put me in prison, I will still remain in prison. And the prison that he's talking about is the prison of his own bitterness and anger. And I think that is another beautiful acknowledgement where you forgive. One of the greatest tools to get rid of anger is forgiveness. And as we said, it starts from saying that anger comes because of something within. And forgiveness also comes to protect that something within, which is that peace of mind.
And when you forgive in the true spirit, in the sense that I'm not forgiving because I'm being compassionate. Many times I have noticed this, because I have tried this personally. If I try to forgive a person because I think that I'm higher and I'm being compassionate, that residual anger still remains. If I only forgive a person because, if I don't forgive you, I'll lose my peace of mind. For my peace of mind, when I forgive, that is true forgiveness, because then no residual anger remains. And when we do this, when we practice this forgiveness in the true sense, in many cases, it actually leads to transformation of the other person also.
Absolutely.
One incident that my mother often narrates, which I have no recollection of, but she says that when I was a child, one of my elder cousin brothers, he wanted to prank me. So it was a festival where food was served on these banana leaves as the traditional South Indian style. And as I bent down, because we were sitting cross-legged on the floor, as I bent down to put a morsel of food in my mouth, this cousin brother of mine held my head and, pressed it into the leaf where all the food was there. So I got up with all the sambar rice, papad and all the sabji on my face. And I was distraught and I began to cry. Instantly, this cousin brother of mine got afraid, got scared, because he was sure that somebody is now going to scold him and thrash him. And my mother, who has always been a strict woman, she came, she picked me up, she just looked at him and she says, that day, she didn't even stare angrily. She just looked at him, but took me, washed my face, got and fed me separately. She says that after a week, this boy came to her and began to cry and apologized for what he had done. And she said that it's only then that I realized that if I had hit him, possibly he would have got that pain for 5 minutes. By not doing anything and just not even looking at him, not even fixing him with a stare. For 7 days it has rankled him. I'm saying when your forgiveness is genuine, it actually sometimes even punishes the person worse than what you could have possibly done by hitting, But again, as I said, this is only a side effect. The actual cause of forgiveness, actual reason for forgiveness, as we discussed, should be for our own peace of mind. With that, dear listeners, we come to a very, very major and amazing part of anger management, which is having done all this, having mastered anger, in the sense when we are able to control its arousal itself, we are now in a position to be able to use this anger for loka kalyanam. And we have innumerable instances of Swami using his anger to do the same. I'm sure if each one of us looks at our own life, we will get many, many little examples in our own life how Swami has corrected with his anger. Here is one discourse clip again, which it's a slightly longish clip, 5 to 6 minutes, but Swami beautifully describes how a person who is in absolute control of anger, it's not that he doesn't get angry, but he uses that anger to achieve loka kalyanam. This is a discourse clip from
18th of May 2000.
Purity. Bhagavan stands for purity. purity is for you.
నాలో ఉన్నటువంటి ఒక ప్యూరిటీ ఈ లోకంలో ఎక్కడ కూడా నువ్వు లేదని చెప్పచ్చు.
The purity present in Bhagavan is not noticed anywhere in the world.
అంత ప్యూరిటీ నా హృదయము.
That is Himalayan purity in
him. కూడాను అక్కడ ఏమాత్రం కూడాను మాలిన్యం చేరడానికి అవకాశం లేదు.
There cannot be any simple trace of dirt being there.
ఆ ప్యూరిటీ వల్లనే ఇన్ని విధములైనటువంటి జగత్తులంతా లాగుతూ వచ్చింది.
బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ద ప్యూరిటీ ఇన్ భగవాన్ డ్రాస్ ది అటెన్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్.
ఇన్విటేషన్ ఇవ్వటం లేదు, ఎవరికి జాబ్ను కూడా రాయను.
నో ఇన్విటేషన్ ఇస్ ఎక్స్టెండెడ్. నో
దేహమైనటువంటి అంత పవిత్రమైనటువంటిది.
ద బాడీ సో ప్యూర్.
ఇలాంటి పవిత్రమైనటువంటి దేహం లోపల ఎవరు కూడా నువ్వు దోషం చూపడానికి వీలు కాదు.
నో వన్ కెన్ పాయింట్ అవుట్ ఎ డిఫెక్ట్ ఆర్ మిస్టేక్ ఇన్ దిస్ బాడీ.
నా యొక్క పేషెన్స్ శాంతం ఎంత ఉందంటే
పేషెన్స్ ఓ భగవాన్.
పర్వతాలు కదిలినా కానీ నా హృదయం కదలదు.
మౌంటైన్స్ మైట్ మూవ్ బట్ హీ డస్ నాట్ మూవ్.
నా హృదయం అంత శాంతంగా ఉంటాయి.
భగవాన్ ఆల్వేస్ రిమైన్స్ ఇన్ పీస్.
అప్పుడప్పుడు కొంచెం బుస్ అంటుంటాను.
బట్ సమ్ టైమ్స్
చెప్పాలిగా కొంతమందిని సరిచేసే నిమిత్తమై ఆ పదములు ఉపయోగపెడుతుంటాను.
టు రెక్టిఫై అండ్ కరెక్ట్ హీ యూజెస్ హార్ష్ వర్డ్స్.
లేకపోతే ఈ పిల్లలు వినేవారు కాదు.
ఆర్ దే వుడ్ నాట్ పే హీ టు హిస్ వర్డ్స్.
బంగారు కూర్చోమా కూర్చోమా అంటే ఎవరు వినరు.
You be seated, you don't hear them.
Hey, kucho. Ante kurchuntaru.
Sit down, then they will
follow. Appudu shabdanni marchali.
Then the tone
has to change. Shabda marpulu chedane bhakta rakshana kuda jarugutu untadi.
By changing the tone, devotee can be saved.
Okaroka samayam lopala.
At one time.
పాండవులు అరణ్యవాసంలో ఉండినప్పుడు.
Well, Pandavas were in exile.
సంవత్సరం లోపల రోమ ఋషి వనం దగ్గరికి వెళ్ళారు.
Pandavas. When they were in the period of exile, in the 13th year, they went to Roma
Rishi.
And they returned.
And
battle
started.
At the time of the commencement of war,
they
have taken a vow.
Yavaru?
Who?
Guru, Guru Vainatunti Vade.
The very preceptor.
Well,
I have to keep up his word.
తప్పించడానికి వీలు కాదన్నాడు.
యూ కెనాట్ ఎస్కేప్ ఫ్రమ్ హిస్.
మీరు ఏమైనా చేయవచ్చును, మీరు తప్ప మాకు అన్యు లేరని ప్రార్థించింది.
ద్రౌపది ప్రేడ్ యూ మే డూ ఎనీథింగ్ బట్ యు ఆర్ ఓన్లీ అవర్ రిఫ్యూజ్.
తర్వాత
లేటర్
ఈ యొక్క భీష్ముడు ద్రోణాచార్యుని యొక్క కుమారుడు,
ద సన్ ఆఫ్ ద్రోణాచార్య,
అతను తమ పిల్లలను చంపాలని వచ్చాడు.
అశ్వత్థామ కేమ్ దేర్ టు కిల్ దేర్ చిల్డ్రన్.
అశ్వత్థామ ప్రతిజ్ఞ పెట్టాడు.
అశ్వత్థామ హస్ టేకెన్ ఎ ఓత్.
పాండవులు ఎక్కడా కనిపించలేదు.
పాండవస్ వర్ నాట్ నోటీస్డ్.
అప్పుడు కృష్ణుడు రక్షించాలి కదా.
కృష్ణ హ్యాడ్ టు రెస్క్యూ.
ఎన్నో నాటకాలు ఆడాల.
హీ హస్ టు యాక్ట్ ఇన్ డిఫరెంట్ వే.
భగవంతుని యొక్క చిత్రములంతా విచిత్రమైనటివి.
ఆల్ యాక్షన్స్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఆర్
మిస్టీరియస్. ఒక యాక్ట్ చేయాలి.
హీ హస్ టు యాక్ట్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ వే.
ప్రతి దానికి కూడా ఒక్కొక్క సీన్ మార్చాలి.
సీన్ హస్ టు
ప్రతి దానికి కూడా ఒక డ్రామాగా నూర్పించాలి.
అండ్ ఎవ్రీ డ్రామా హస్ టు బి ఎనాక్టెడ్.
పరిగెత్తిపోయాడు కృష్ణుడు.
అండ్ కృష్ణ ర్యాన్.
ఎవరి దగ్గరికి?
Where?
Dhritarashtra, ఒక దుర్వాసుని దగ్గరికి పోయాడు.
అండ్ హస్ గాన్ క్లోజ్ టు దుర్వాస.
దుర్వాసుని దగ్గరికి పోయేటప్పటికి దుర్వాస చాలా నమస్కరించి చాలా గౌరవంగా చూచాడు.
దుర్వాస రిసీవ్డ్ కృష్ణ ఇన్ ఆల్ రెస్పెక్ట్.
స్వామి ఎందుకోసం వచ్చారు మా ఆశ్రమానికి?
స్వామి వాట్ బ్రాట్ యూ హియర్?
నాకు ఒక చిన్న పని ఉంటుండాలి.
ఐ గాట్ ఎ సింపుల్ టాస్క్.
అది నీతో చేయించాలని వచ్చానన్నాడు.
ఐ వాంట్ టు గెట్ ఇట్ డన్ బై యూ.
తమ ఆజ్ఞకు నేను బద్ధుండైనా తప్పక ఏమి చెప్పినా చేస్తానన్నాడు.
ఐఎమ్ బౌండ్ డ్యూటీ బౌండ్ టు యువర్ కమాండ్. ఐ విల్ సర్టన్లీ డూ వాట్ ఎవర్ యూ సే.
ఈనాటి రాత్రి పాండవులు నీవు కాపాడాలి.
దిస్ నైట్ యూ హ్యావ్ టు రెస్క్యూ అండ్ సేవ్ పాండవాస్.
తమరు కాపాడేవారు కానీ నేనేమిటి కాపాడటం అన్నాడు.
ఇట్స్ ఓన్లీ హూ కెన్ ప్రొటెక్ట్ దెమ్. వాట్ ఈస్ ఇట్ ఐ ప్రొటెక్ట్ దెమ్.
కానీ నాది వేరే. నీ ద్వారా దర్శించేది ఇంకోటి వేరే.
ఐఎమ్ సెపరేట్ డిఫరెంట్ బట్ దిస్ హాస్ టు బి డన్ త్రూ యూ.
నా రక్షణలు ఎన్ని రకములుగానో ఉంటుంటాయి.
హౌ ఐఎమ్ గోయింగ్ టు ప్రొటెక్ట్ యూ డు నాట్ నో.
కనుక ఒక పని చేయాలన్నాడు.
యూ హావ్ టు డూ వన్ థింగ్.
ఏం చేయమని చెప్పారు?
వాట్ ఈస్ టు బి డన్?
కింద ఒక గుంత తవ్వు.
అండ్ లెట్ దర్ బి
ఆ గుంత పాండవులు కూర్చోబెట్టు.
లెట్ పాండవాస్ బి సీటెడ్ దేర్.
దానిపైన పలక వేయి.
లెట్ దర్ బి ప్లాంక్ ఓవర్ దట్.
ఆ పలక పైన నీ కుర్చీ వేసుకో.
యూ హావ్ యువర్ చైర్.
ఆ కుర్చీ పైన కూర్చో.
యూ సిట్ ఆన్ దట్.
వస్తారు ఎవరైనా దుర్యోధన దుశ్శాసనాథులు ఎవరైనా వస్తారు.
ది అదర్ ఎనిమీస్ మే కమ్.
లేక ద్రోణాచార్యుని కుమారుడే వస్తాడు.
అశ్వత్థామ మే ఆల్సో కమ్.
వచ్చినా కానీ అడుగుతాడు, స్వామి మీరు త్రికాల జ్ఞానులు కదా, పాండవులు ఎక్కడున్నారని అడుగుతాడు.
దే మే ఆస్క్ స్వామి యు నో ఆల్ ది పాస్ట్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఫ్యూచర్ వేర్ ఆర్ పాండవాస్.
దుర్వాసు చెప్పు. స్వామి నేను అబద్ధమాడను అన్నాడు.
దుర్వాస సైడ్ ఐఎమ్ నాట్ గోయింగ్ టు అటర్ ఎ లై.
సన్యాసి నిన్ను అబద్ధమాడమని నేను చెప్తున్నానా?
అరే ఓ సెలబ్రేట్ డు ఐ వాంట్ యు టు అటర్ లైస్.
అబద్ధమాడమని నేను కూడా చెప్పను.
ఐ టు డోంట్ సే దాట్.
సత్యాన్న పరుధర్మం సత్యమే నా యొక్క ప్రథమం.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్
సత్యమే చెప్పు.
టెల్ ట్రూత్.
కానీ శబ్దాన్ని మార్చుతూ ఉన్నాడు.
బట్ చేంజ్ యువర్ టోన్ వాయిస్.
అశ్వత్థామ వచ్చి స్వామి పాండవులు ఎక్కడున్నారని చాలా వినయంగా అడిగాడు.
అశ్వత్థామ కేమ్ ఇన్ ఆల్ హ్యూమిలిటీ అండ్ ఆస్క్డ్
ఉన్నారు గట్టిగా.
హి సెడ్ పాండవస్ దే ఆర్ బినీత్ మీ.
శబ్దమును మార్చాడు.
హి చేంజ్ ద టోన్.
శబ్దమును మార్చేటప్పటికే
దెన్ వన్స్ వాయిస్ ఇస్ చేంజ్
అశ్వత్థామ పరిగెత్తిపోయాడు.
అశ్వత్థామ ర్యాన్ అవే అఫ్రైడ్ ఆఫ్ ది సిచ్యువేషన్.
కాబట్టి అతను పోవటం వల్ల పాండవుల యొక్క ప్రేమ ఒక ప్రాణం రక్షించేది కదా.
బికాస్ దట్స్ వే
పాండవుని శబ్దాలు మార్చవలసి వస్తుంటాయి.
గాడ్ ఆల్సో చేంజెస్ వాయిస్.
శబ్దాలు మార్చినట్టు చేత కొన్ని కార్యము సక్రమంగా జరిగిపోతుంటాయి.
సర్టన్ టాస్క్ ఆర్ అకంప్లిష్డ్ బై దిస్.
అన్ని అవతారములు ఎందుకు కూడాను శబ్దాలు మార్చడం అనేది సహజంగా జరుగుతూనే వచ్చాయి.
ఇన్ ఆల్ ఇన్కార్నేషన్స్ దిస్ హాస్ బీన్ గోయింగ్ ఆన్.
So I think that's that beautiful clip, and you know, even as Swami was saying that, there was no necessity for Swami to justify his expression of anger or whatever it is. But you know how beautifully Swami says, and you know, it really brings to your mind the so many times when we have experienced it, we have witnessed it ourselves, especially when Swami is saying, sit down, right? Because, I mean, if you come to think of it, Swami would stand there and it was so difficult to actually control all of us when we were running around Swami. We've seen devotees coming running. But one look from Swami and one finger wagging is enough. You know, discipline will be there. And that kind of control comes, as Swami was so beautifully saying, not out of anger, but out of that purity and selflessness behind that anger. You knew very well where that anger was coming from.
You see, unless you have internal control, it's impossible to achieve external control. And I feel that absolute silence that would pervade the entire Swayagi Kulwant Hall with just Bhagwan's arrival, I feel that is testimony to the absolute internal control that Swami has. Because it is not possible for anybody else. Prime ministers, presidents have walked in, you know. People of great power, people of great wealth have walked into Swayagi Kulwant Hall. But such discipline and silence have not been there. Which shows that it is not about how much external wealth or power or control that you have, but the internal wealth, internal power and internal control you have. In fact, so many have been the people who have not seen Swami, who have not been acquainted with his works, but have got impressed with their first visit to Prashanthi Nilayam by simply seeing the discipline in Swayagi Kulwant Hall, the kind of magnetic control that Swami seems to exercise. So, you know, well, that's a different path altogether. So, it would be wrong to say Swami got angry. Swami, just like Durvasa in that case, used anger for Loka Kalyanam. Whatever Swami did, he used attachment for Loka Kalyanam, he used anger for Loka Kalyanam. There is this concept in science, you know, where you are able to bring about nuclear fission, where you break an atom into small parts and it releases tremendous energy. There are two ways we see this happening. One is what is infamously called the atom bomb, which causes widespread destruction. The other is what we call as a nuclear reactor, which produces power to which produces enough electricity to power up cities. I feel when it comes to anger management, this becomes very apt, whether we want to be a nuclear bomb or a nuclear reactor. Because a nuclear bomb is what we are actually. When we get angry, we just express the anger, cause large-scale havoc and devastation. But Swami shows from his own life as to once you master anger, how you can be a nuclear reactor. You can utilize the tremendous energy that anger generates within you to use it in a manner that is beneficial to everybody. Recently I saw a TED talk by the Nobel Prize winning Kailash Satyarthi from India. He's a Nobel Peace Prize winner from India.
Right.
And he won the Peace Prize because of the tremendous work he has done in the field of, you know, welfare for children.
Right.
To stop child trafficking, to stop child labor and all these things. And when you listen to his talk, he says this only. He says that it is not as if I am a peaceful person. It is not as if I don't get angry. I have not expressed my anger, but all the anger that I felt when I saw child trafficking happening, when I saw child labor happening, I ensured that all that energy is used in a positive manner so that instead of just causing damage to 2-3 people and to my own peace of mind, it actually benefits the children and also creates great peace of mind in me. So I think it's not just that we can just say that, you know, Swami could do it, we can't do it. We have many living examples in the world to show that the great tremendous energy of anger, just like how we harness the energy of an atom, we can harness this energy of anger to do things which bring about a lot of welfare to the world.
And interestingly, you know, talking about Satyarthi getting the Nobel Prize, I think that year the Nobel Prize was shared with a girl from Pakistan, Malala Yousafzai. Hmm. And interestingly, you know, her story also was about anger and probably more about forgiveness, because we know that, you know, she comes from that valley, one particular district in Pakistan where the Taliban was threatening that children, especially girl children, should not be sent to school. And her father stood by her, and she said, I mean, he said that, no, she will go to school, and she gets shot at by one of the terrorists. And, you know, in an interview beautifully, she says, when the interviewer asks her, do you feel anger? And interestingly, you're talking about atomic reactions. She says, not even the size of an atom, not even the size of a proton, she says. He says, I've never felt angry. And she said, because I've forgiven the people who have done this to me. And, you know, that forgiveness, what it has made her is, it has made her exactly what those people did not want her to become. She has become a champion of girl education in, you know, Pakistan.
And rest of the world as
well.
And
rest of the world. And because of her, so many more people have become more courageous to go and, you know, take on these people who are trying to stop girl education. And I think that is the power. And it all starts with, you know, be it Satyarthi or be it Malala Yousafzai. You know, when you're backed by purity, even when there is a situation which creates anger, I think that anger also will result in goodness. I think that's what Swami had told in another discourse about Durvasa. Swami said always Durvasa's anger resulted in Loka Kalyanam, because he was a person who was pure. He was, after all, a sage at the end of the day. He was a person who was, had purified his internal nature so much that even anger on the firmament of a pure heart resulted only in goodness.
I think with this we have done the entire journey. We started off by saying that when we get angry, what damage it causes. From getting angry and causing damage, can we move to a stage where we are able to control the expression of anger so that damage is minimized? From there, we move on to a stage where we control the arousal of anger itself so that there is no thing about expression. You know, so there is, in the first stage, there is anger and expression. Then there is anger and no expression. Then we move to a stage of no anger, no expression. And once we reach that stage, we move to the final stage where there's no anger, but there is expression, because you're using anger also as one of the tools to achieve Loka Kalyanam. I think this is the entire cycle. Once again, to repeat it, anger and expression, then anger but no expression, then we go to no anger, no expression, and finally we move to a stage of no anger, but there is expression to achieve Loka Kalyanam. And that kind of selfless anger is something beautiful. And when Swami says there's nothing bad in this universe, from that Advaitic stance, when we see, we realize that even anger is not bad. But, you know, the whole discussion over the 2 weeks shows what, in what sense we have to take the meaning of the statement that anger is not bad. Speaking of Advaita, one is reminded of the greatest Advaitin that India has produced, possibly, that is Adi Shankara. And here is a discourse clip where Swami makes reference to Adi Shankara, highlighting what kind of anger is actually good and what is fruitless.
Vyartham kupyasi mayasi hishnuhu annadu tirigi. Anaga, నీవు వృథాగా కోపించుకొని ప్రయోజనము లేదు. కారణమేమనగా, నీవు ఓపిక లేనటువంటి కోపము నీకే అపకారము అని కూడాను ఇందులో బోధించాడు.
ఆఫ్టర్ దాట్ హీ హాస్ స్టేటెడ్ దట్ ఇఫ్ యూ హ్యావ్ నో పేషెన్స్ అండ్ విదౌట్ పేషెన్స్ ఇఫ్ యూ బికమ్ యాంగ్రీ, దిస్ యాంగర్ ఆఫ్ యువర్స్ బికమ్స్ క్వైట్ ఫ్రూట్లెస్ అండ్ యూస్లెస్. This is what he has taught in the second line of the verse.
Anaga opika leka mana kopamu mana papamunaku oka dupam ani kudanu indulo artham.
There is also a meaning here that your anger, which arises of lack of patience, will also promote your own jealousy. It helps the jealousy to grow.
Kana మనము ఇట్టి ఓపిక లేని కోపమును అరికట్టుకునేటువంటి విధానము సమత్వమైనటువంటి చిత్తమునందే మనకు ప్రాప్తిస్తుంది.
ది ఎబిలిటీ టు కంట్రోల్ దిస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ యాంగర్ విచ్ కమ్స్ అప్ బికాస్ యూ హ్యావ్ నో పేషెన్స్ దట్ విల్ కమ్ ఓన్లీ వెన్ యూ కెన్ డెవలప్ ది ఈక్వానిమిటీ ఆఫ్ యువర్ మైండ్.
అట్టి సమత్వం ప్రాప్తించేటువంటి నిమిత్తమై మనము కొన్ని విచారణ కూడాను అత్యవసరంగా చేయవలసినటువంటిది.
In order that you may be able to acquire this equanimity of mind, there is a necessity for you to make some enquiries.
Bhava samatvam sarvatratvam ani kudanu indulo moodava line kinda cheppadu.
In the third line of the verse, it has also been said that you will be able to acquire this equanimity when you are able to see the same aspect and equal mindedness in everything around you.
That was a clip from Swami's 1973 Samukos discourses. But how beautifully Swami says, you know, we all think that we get angry, especially about, we spoke about it last week, what we refer to as righteous anger, right? We all are given to that, and we are not given to that because we are righteous, we are given to that because we are capable of getting angry. Right? And I think what Swami was saying is we have to concentrate on being more righteous, and the more we purify that feeling and more we work on patience, the beautiful thing, that is the first statement that Swami made, without patience, anger is useless. Meaning that even anger can be useless, but for that it has to be backed by patience.
Even anger can be useful.
Useful, but it has to be backed by patience and selflessness.
With that, dear listeners, we bring to a close whatever limited wisdom, knowledge that we could gather from Bhagwan's invaluable discourses. We hope that you have enjoyed these two sessions on anger management. And as always, you can share your thoughts, your feelings, your feedback, anything to us by writing to us at listener@radiosai.org. The next fortnight, the next 2 weeks, we will be continuing with our Bhagavata Vahini Satsang. So tune in then next week at the same time for afternoon satsang, but we will have Bhagavata Vahini. With that, we offer this segment once again humbly at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. Grateful to him for this wonderful opportunity to be able to think of him, because as Swami once said, without his grace, we won't be able to even think of him. The very fact that we are thinking of him shows that we are indeed blessed and we have his grace. Let us be grateful for that grace. Enjoy the day ahead, enjoy the week ahead, and fill our lives with him. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Jai Sai Guru Deva.
స్వరూపారాధన